The foreman stands up on the platform. It's a good job. Highlight a couple of more. We already talked about the first two. When one's thorough understanding of the teaching is on par with a thorough penetration of mind, then that's like the sun in the vast empty sky. What is transmitted is only the Dharma of seeing the nature, which transcends the world and shatters erroneous views. We talked about that, right? We also talked about the next verse. In this Dharma, there is neither gradual or sudden. In delusion and awakening, however, there is slowness and quickness. The gate of seeing self-nature is that which the ignorant cannot fathom. We also spoke about that one. And Sharon asked a question about seeing the wrongs of others. We spoke about thus. If you see the wrongs of others, then you yourself are also wrong. If you consider others wrong, but you're not, then your wrong is a self-grave transgression. Just discard the fault-finding mind, and vexations will be destroyed. When your mind is not captivated by aversion and craving, you can then stretch out your legs and rest. So basically, we understand that idea. But I praise that in the context of all forms have their own ways. They do not hinder one another. To seek the way apart from the way, you'll never see it. And I also mention another verse. Buddha Dharma pervades the world, cannot be realized apart from it. Seeking Bodhi apart from the world is just like looking for the horns on a hare. That pretty much covers the whole Platform Sutra, at least the formless stanza. But I want to re-emphasize this point of engaging with the world. Engaging with our life and all the vicissitudes of life and all of our reactions to life, that is our path. So, the next verse I would like to introduce goes something like this. Ordinarily, when erroneous views emerge, vexations follow. When the correct views arise, vexations are eradicated. But when neither erroneous nor correct views are engaged, purity reaches no remainder. Bodhi is fundamentally our self-nature. But to generate the thought, square bracket, the Bodhi, is delusion. The mind of purity exists in delusion. Be upright, and the three obstructions will be absent. Very important. Because normally people think, vexations? Vexations is normal. I have the right to be angry. When I first became a monk, when I was young, my brother asked me why. And I said I wanted to practice. I wanted to be free from vexations. He says, vexations? Vexations are normal. Vexations. No. Coming out of his mouth, vexations are normal. It's different than coming out of Chan Master's mouth. Vexations are normal. What he means is like, The world's things. Get what you want out of it. You have a right to be angry. You have this and that. More people don't want it. They don't see their vexations and problems. The fingers point outwards. Other people have problems. Practitioners of Dharma learn with the Dharma. But it's very enticing, luring to start to use the Buddha Dharma to start to substitute vexations. Or they use the Buddha Dharma to start to measure themselves and measure other people. And they get themselves worse. Guilt, anger. So, it is correct to use Buddha Dharma. Buddha Dharma is meant to be used. But Buddha Dharma not only exists in words and language in the scriptures, they point to something that's in our life. If we use Buddha Dharma as a way to substitute, to make us feel good. In other words, we use Buddha Dharma not to free ourselves from grasping and rejecting. We're still using the grasping and rejecting mind. Now that we have more tools, it's called Buddha Dharma. We use the grasping and rejecting mind to romanticize, idealize, or to project on the Buddha Dharma our own grasping, rejecting, to measure ourselves, to measure other people. Then the Buddha Dharma has now reached your heart. You see that? Mm-hmm. The Buddha Dharma is meant to. It's meant for us. It's meant for what? It's meant to free ourselves from the most fundamental poisons of the mind, which is grasping, rejecting, which comes out of ignorance. Three poisons of the mind. This is Dharma 101, right? Three poisons. Craving, aversion, ignorance. If you don't use it to apply to that, then it's the wrong way. Still, sometimes wrong way is better than no way. So when we first begin, we learn this. Right? And then we hear, we understand more about the Dharma, and then we go, oh, it's meant to. And then we slowly learn. Right? So that's because of our own kind of grasping, then there's gradual and there's sudden to understand. Pick our own obstructions. So both are fine. But now that we know what it's meant for, we have to be very careful. That's why the text says, ordinarily when erroneous views emerge, one of those erroneous views, I have a right to be angry. The world stinks. Get what you can get out of it. You know, even at the expense of stepping over other people. Erroneous view. Then what happens? Vexations follow. That's the first level. Ordinary folks. Now comes the Dharma practitioners, beginning Dharma practitioners. When the correct views arise, vexations are eradicated. They're left with Dharma. Correct views. A lot of the correct views, a lot of standards. When you start to measure everyone. Sometimes charm masters, they use this analogy. They say, some people's practice, Dahui, Master Dahui Zhonggao, one of the Song Dynasty great charm master, says some people's practice is like using a wooden peg and replacing the rotten part of a piece of wood. It's a rotten kind of, in wood grain, sometimes there's a, what is that called, eye?
A
knot hole. Something gets wrong. So you use another peg to knock it through. So left with the new peg. This is useful. You get the rotten part out. But then you're still stuck with a piece of wood. So he says, just get rid of the wood. Just put the wood. So in your heart, in your mind, no traces of anything behind. Not even a standard in your heart. But in operating in the world, then people need standard. Not for you, for the sake of others. People can use the wood to sit down, to write on. He says, if you want to enter the charm gate, you have to first relinquish all that you have accumulated. And you have identified with yourself, standards, rules, conventions. He says, next, you have to take off your clothes. Next, you have to shed your skin and bones. Finally, let go of your mind. Then you enter the door of charm. So it's not only like when some practitioners, some teachers talk about naked awareness. This is a very fancy term. Right? How many of you have heard this? Yeah, naked awareness. I don't really know what that refers to, but it sounds good. Bare attention, naked awareness. You're still left with mind. You're still left with something. So it's necessary to kind of bear it, relinquish it from all the clutter. But then, in order to enter the door of charm, let go of everything. We call that the great death. Only going through the great death, the person can live great life, revive. At that time, the life is for the sake of all beings. So that's why Hui Nian here talks about ordinarily, erroneous views arise, vexations follow. We gotta do something about erroneous views. How? We give rise to correct views. When correct views arise, vexations eradicated. Don't stop there. The next line says, when neither erroneous or correct views are engaged, purity reaches no remainder. That's like nakedness. Nothing. No remainder. No remainder. And Buddha Dharma is a technical word, actually. It means nirvana. It doesn't even refer to nirvana with remainder. Nirvana without remainder. That's Buddha's realization. Right? So, dependent origination. All things come together because of causes and conditions. This is the Dharma of rising and perishing. That's what the Buddha said. But I didn't say that. If you have a problem with it, go with the Buddha. This is what he said. But he said something afterwards. That which arises and ceases, when that ceases, Nirvana is bliss. Dependent origination belongs to the world of samsara. It's a teaching for samsaric beings. It helps us to let go of our attachment when we think of things as objects of our possession, when we think about our views as mine and me. Oh, me comes from non-me. It helps us kind of release this kind of sense of separateness, independence. So he taught that. Not the highest teaching. It's a teaching that helps us. It's a tool. 生灭灭矣，涅槃寂静. Those of you who understand Chinese. When that which arises and perishes, which is when that which dependently, how do things arise? Dependently arise. How do things cease? Dependently, separate cease. When that which arises and ceases, cease, nirvana is bliss. That's this. So correct views are tools to help us. Don't get caught up with the tools. We use the tools. How do we use it? In a very lively, organic, flexible, fluid way. Right? There is no fixed way. There's a principle, and that principle, I've said it in actually the most simplest, down-to-earth way possible. And that is, when you have vexations, whatever view that arises, just turn it upside down. That's probably the Buddha Dharma. Flexible. You see? That's the secret my teacher taught me. Now, offering to all of you. Now it's no secret anymore. But you have to use it. When you have vexations, this person is wrong, that person is wrong. Why should I do this? Why should I do that? He says, I should do that. That person is right. Even giving rise to vexations is wrong. We'll see the flaws of others. Yeah. The fault-finding mind. And vexations. Purity. That is purity. That is purity. And purity reaches no remainder. Entering the gate of Chan. Let's take off your belongings. Take off your clothes. Shed your skin. Your bones. Your mind. Then you're in. No, we're not promoting suicide. We're not promoting relinquish your jobs, but we are promoting all of your jobs, all of your role, your status, your wealth, your vexations. It has nothing to do with your true nature. Don't leave traces of those impressions in your mind. And my teacher was able to relate to all kinds of people. When I first learned meditation, when I was 11, he was just playing with me. I want to learn Kung Fu, he told me to sit. He can relate to kids, he can relate to adults. He can relate to rich people, people of high social status. The Taiwanese president goes to him for advice. Jet Li, go come to our retreat. One time on our retreat, he said, looks like Jet Li. No, I can't be. It's Jet Li! You can relate to all kinds of people, but there's no fixed, rigid identity here. There's standard. So, reflecting, interacting with one person, responds in another way. Another, responds in another way. The Dharma freely flows. for that reason, the next verse. Bodhi is our fundamental self-nature. It's something we have to be convinced of, like the sun, concealed by stormy weather, dark clouds. It is there. And we have glimpses of it. Glimpses. But we know it's there. The more we practice, the more we understand it. As long as you practice correctly. If your practice is about substitution, you know, some kind of spiritual materiality, then maybe not. Right? You practice without grasping, rejecting, seeking, aversion. Then that kind of peace that you realize, it's not a peace from getting some reward. It's a peace from free from the disturbance, the burden of grasping, rejecting. See? Bodhi, since Bodhi is our fundamental self-nature, that's why the text says, to generate the thought, I put in square bracket, Bodhi. But in Chinese, it's just to generate thought, 起心. But because before he's talking about Bodhi mind, so I put Bodhi, to generate Bodhi, the thought of Bodhi mind, that is delusion. Delusion is not all bad. I don't think he's criticizing delusion. We shouldn't generate Bodhi mind now. Because the next line says, the mind of purity, what kind of purity? That mind without remainder, nirvanic mind. Mind of purity exists where? In delusion. Okay? It's not bifurcating, cutting, kind of creating opposition. Let me read it again. Bodhi is fundamentally our self-nature. But to generate the thought of Bodhi is delusion. The mind of purity exists in delusion. Mm-hmm. Be upright, and the three obstructions will be absent. You'll be free. Delusion. In delusion, there's a lot of obstacles. There's right and wrong. There's gaining and losing. And there's what is called three obstructions. It's the traditional technical Buddhist term. I place this, there's a lot of threes and fours and eights and fives in Buddhism. I chose this from the Mahanirvana Sutra because the Huinen, he was talking about Mahanirvana Sutra, particularly with a nun in the Platform Sutra. And the nun that memorized the whole Mahaparinirvana. So, according to that scripture, the three obstructions are obstructions of afflictions, fanatic. Second, obstructions of karmic retribution, yetong. Third, obstructions of painful circumstances. Being born, or inescapably being in a situation of painful, yishouzhang. That's from Mahaparinirvana Sutra. These three pretty much covers everything. But that is where Bodhi is discovered. In the midst of delusion, in the midst of our life, in the midst of three obstructions. Most people living a regular, steady, stable life, they may not be born in a situation in which there's great, great physical suffering, like war. Mm-hmm. ISIS, the victim of ISIS. Palestinian, is Israeli. They're not born there.
We're born here.
At least you don't have Yishouzhang, which is the, that particular obstruction, so be grateful. But we have the other two. Obstructions of vexations. Yeah. And obstructions of karma. That shapes your particular life a particular way. You can have siblings, but they don't experience the same thing as you. It is in our life, in our situations, where Bodhi is discovered, is revealed to us. This intrinsic freedom. Some furniture in our life are hurting us all the time. We trip over it all the time. So the ordinary person without practice, without coming across Dharma, they trip over it, but it's in a dark room. That's normal. I'm used to it. It's a fact of life. You just get tripped over it. But they have no need to practice. So, practitioner, you see that. There's something we can do about it. You move it. You fix it. And because you are successful, or you've learned a particular way, no. That's not the right way to do it. This is the way to do it. This is the way to fix it. To move it. That's the erroneous views emerge, vexations follow. Correct views arise, vexations eradicate. Now we have to do this. We have to do neither erroneous or correct views engage. Purity, which is no remainder. Nirvana is realized in samsara. How? By realizing the nature of mind. Is there still a need to move the furniture that's harming ourselves and harming other people? Yes, we remove it. But it leaves no trace in our own mind. See? Because we realize the true nature of obstructions in the furniture and spaciousness. It's very difficult. Very difficult. For small vexations, yes, we can forgive other people. Small vexations, maybe, you know, you lost your favorite iPhone, someone broke up with you. For most people, it's okay. They have counseling, good parents from the counseling. They don't really think it's the end of the world, or gaining, losing, something else. Losing a job. One time I was dear to a retreatant. He lost everything in his life. His business completely bankrupt. He and his wife lost everything. He didn't tell me the reason that they lost everything, but he was able to turn around, reshift his focus. He was a great cook. And he said to me, that was the best thing that happened to him. He discovered the Dharma in the midst of the pit, the lowest part. He discovered the Dharma, he practiced. And he became a great cook for retreat centers, Dharma places, both practitioners. Sometimes something is not so good, maybe the best thing. Sometimes something seems so great, wonderful, and it leads us down the wrong path. So, if we have fix fixations, the degree to which we fixate on one particular way of viewing things, to that extent you will suffer. If you are able to turn it around, let go of previous notions of loss and gain, you find a new path. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This life is like that. So for most people, you know, they can utilize Dharma. But we have to be grateful. There's a lot of things to be grateful of. The center of the fact that we come across a Dharma, because for those people who experience the third obstruction, very hard. So you better practice now, because we don't know when that third obstruction will come. Those people who are born situated in an inevitable, inescapable intensity of pain and suffering. Very difficult. The Buddha has said, those beings who are born in the human realm has the fortune of coming across vexations, losing, pain, and the Dharma, and the bliss, and the joy of life. Those people in total pure bliss, you tell them, come over here to retreat. Here, put your legs in the pretzel. Experience pain. Come. They're not going to do it. They're in total bliss. They have no need, no incentive. Devas. Likewise, those beings who are in just abject poverty, complete suffering, physical pain, say, come join me in a Dharma talk. Put your leg in the pretzel shape. No, I need food now. Or, I'm in pain now. They want to alleviate that. Very difficult. You see?
Mm.
We have a lot to be grateful to. Grateful to Dharma. So, now that we all know this, just preemptively, in case in the future, you find yourself in the third situation, remember the Dharma. That will be your lifesaver. That will save you. If you practice the Dharma genuinely, you don't have to worry about food and shelter. If you worry about food and shelter all the time, no Dharma. Physical pain, physical obstructions. So the degree of our suffering, of our vexations, of our situation, circumstances, from that perspective, there is slowness and quickness in realizing our fundamental self-nature, Bodhi. But from the perspective of Bodhi, no quickness, no gradual sudden. The key here is to practice engaging all kinds of virtue. All kinds of virtue. Practice. And not leave trace behind. Utilize all that we need in life as opportunity to practice. These three pretty much covers everything. Perhaps a bit more about karma. Karma. Karmic retribution. Vexations, we're pretty familiar with. Pain, we imagine. Mm-hmm. Perhaps some of us have experienced that. Great pain, great suffering. Karma. Results of our intended action. Leaves kind of repercussions. And determines. Buddha Dharma talks about karma of three innumerable periods. And most religions, they have a kind of a twofold understanding of life. This life and the next one. Next one is the heaven or hell. Some religions have a threefold, but not innumerable threefold. It's like threefold, just one life right before this one, which is maybe originally come from God. Right? So we put on earth this life to accomplish some task. And then if you do a good job, the heaven is waiting. Don't do a good job, it'll be hell. Right? So maybe threefold. You know, some other religion may have, you know, innumerable lives in the past, innumerable in the future. But it's a kind of a creation by some kind of creator. So the creator is outside of this game of past, present, and future. We're just stuck in it. Right? So, if you practice, you return to the Creator. But it's still kind of a threefold. Before we come from it, you know, we're stuck in this realm, and then in the future, we can go back to it. But the Dharma is a little different. We experience the result of our own actions. And we reap our own virtue. Yeah. Our actions leaves particular imprints in the most subtle form of mental continuum. And the way I like to talk about it is kind of like Santa Claus bag. You know, Santa Claus? Everyone loves Santa Claus in the West, Santa Claus bag. Whatever presents we put inside, we put it inside. Actually, so if the majority of the stuff in the Santa Claus bag is good, so we blindfold, reach out, it's probably a present. But the majority is not so good, not so good. No one else put that in the bag. The actions that we do leave an imprint in our mind. If we tend to do things a certain way, if we tend to view things a certain way, we will tend to see things a certain way. Take for this life. A person, a particular propensity. There are many different types of people. Some are the fighter type. Some are the self-disparaging type. They seem like humble people, but the attachment is just as strong as the fighter type. Right? It shapes them. They can't get out of that. For example, there are some people that encounter difficulties, they always think this is my fault, I'm sorry. It's a kind of a self-victimization. They always kind of victimize themselves. I'm the fault. Everything is always happening to me. Then, when that person passes away, the mental continuum does not stop. We were born in a place in which the person is always victimized. things always happen to this person. You understand? How come things doesn't go away? Because it's observable in life. Do things come out of nothing? Things come out of thin air? In material world, there's always causation. Cause and effect, cause and effect. Mental continuum is also cause and effect. So materiality, let's say the fetus. Suddenly out of thin air, nothing happens. Suddenly consciousness. No. If you accept things can come out of nothing, then maybe that's true for you. But it's not observable. Actually, nothing is like that in the real world. In order for a sudden emergence of consciousness, there must be previous moment of mental continuum as cause leading to the next effect. You understand this logic? This is the reasoning out. This is how the Yogacaras reason out cause and effect in terms of Buddhist epistemology. Mental continuums like this, material continuation is also like this. Cause and effect, cause and effect, cause and effect. The cause becomes an effect, effect itself turns to a cause for an effect. In the midst of this, what keeps it all together, is grasping. Grasping. It's not a conscious kind of grasping. When Buddha Dharma talk about self-grasping, they're not talking about selfish people. You know? A very humble person have a just as strong self-attachment. They're talking about a very fundamental way that we are wired to hold on to refer to this, assume this sense of permanent sense of self. Very deep, deep rooted. Now, the coarse manifestations we can see, but the very subtle part, you already have to see. So it's like a river. River with all the water droplets, they flow one direction. There's no self. It seems like one continuum, but you put the magnifying glass, it's just drops of water. But what keeps this river from flowing all over the place are the river banks holding the river. And sometimes that too shifts. Great rivers on earth kind of shifts the course and so on. But basically, there are some causes and conditions holding it together. So even though there is no self, originally free, it doesn't deny the workings of causation, continuation. Yeah, it's free, it's just like the river. It looks like one sheet of water, but it's little droplets. Does that make sense? What contains it is that riverbank. What contains in our life is our grasping, our sense of continuity. That when we look at a picture of ourselves 2 years old, we say, that's me. Even though every part of your body completely changed. From your cellular level to views change all the time. It's that mental grasp, it's that deep, deep rooted grasp. And that becomes absorbed. Now we call it seventh consciousness. Becomes absorbed back, dissolves back into the eighth consciousness, the most subtle form of continuation, the Santa Claus back. That continues, propels. And depending on the content of back, that shapes the next birth. See? Most of it is good, you grab it, but it's good. It's a present. Take another thing, that's not a present, not so good. So what determines is the cause, particular causes and conditions that shapes which present comes out first, shape the next.
So whatever circumstances we find ourselves karmically, our situations, our life, it's not fatalism. Because what determines the future is our action now. It's a dependent arising. That's the teaching. Causes and conditions, the workings of causes and conditions. So we do have a choice. So it's not fatalism. So as it arises, finding our circumstances, we must change the ingredients of the workings of causes and conditions. Then, new things will come. Right? Like this piece of paper. Very important. I will say a few words about what we're supposed to do with this. Piece of paper comes from all these non-paper things. But if one ingredient changes, the whole thing changes. Maybe put one ingredient, the paper becomes more elastic. There are paper that are more elastic. And they're kind of rice paper, more crispy. The conditions change, outcomes change. So in being a practitioner, we have to understand if we don't practice, then we follow, then our life is fixed. Because the momentum of karma is too strong. If we practice, we learn to adapt. We change vexations into bodhi. We change obstacles into opportunities. Then that's how we change our fate. Do you understand that? How we do it? Something that I teach. Fourfold understandings of causes and conditions. Please remember, this is very useful, I think. First, learn to observe causes and conditions. Second, adapt to causes and conditions. Third, wait or stop. Don't react. Causes and conditions. Fourth, create new causes and conditions. Can you remember? Mm-hmm. Learn to recognize. Don't see things from this perspective all the time. Your view, your prapanka, your projections. Learn to see things from other people's view. The causes and conditions. Learn to recognize. Then you will know when to advance, when to retreat, when to stop, when to create. So, recognize, flow, adapt to, wait. Sometimes not the right timing. We have to wait for the right causes and conditions. Fourth, create. I'll give you one example. Our Dharmadraw Mountain Buddhist College in Taiwan. Maybe I shouldn't record this. It's strange because my teacher is promoting the study of the practice of Chinese Buddhism, but in terms of academia, the promotion of study of Chinese Buddhism. So on all levels, academic, practice, you know, popular, you know, specialized. The study of Chinese Buddhism is the weakest academic field within Dharmadraw Buddhist College. Very strange. Sanskrit study is the highest. Pali. So I go back, I talk to the president, and we're chatting, and I spoke to some faculty member who's responsible for Chinese Buddhism. They're complaining, they're not hiring a new line. We need a new faculty in Chinese Buddhism, not another, you know. So I talked to the president. I said to the faculty member, I said, nothing you can do for now. We have to wait. To wait for cause and conditions. And I gave him news, good news, I said. Recently in the United States, it's very famous. Scholar, Chinese Buddhism, retired. He's very free. He's only in his late 50s, early 60s. Anyways, a long time. Very close with my teacher, when my teacher was alive. He's retired. I said, you don't need to do anything. You don't need to rebel, kind of board meeting, this stuff, you know, why have to get on? I said, let me do it. I said, so I recommended the principal, the president. I said, you know, so-and-so, your friend, he's retired. He's got a lot of time on his hands. So why don't we invite him to Dharmajong Buddhist College for a summer intensive course? This will be a kind of a very strong attraction for scholars, young scholars, right, around the field and so on. That's creating causes and conditions, because you can't really change it. The causes and conditions of an institution is way beyond one person, too big. But all you have to do is add one ingredient, then it will just start to unravel itself. Get a retired, very famous academic of Chinese Buddhism to study, to teach there. And students will be attracted, other faculty members will form there. The causes and conditions will just form itself. You understand? Mm-hmm. That's creating causes and conditions. We have to wait for timing. We have to see what's happening. Because there's a lot of power at play. You know, we're talking about institution. Right? So you just change one major condition, things will just unravel by itself. Understanding that, in facing our karmic retribution, we discover the mind of purity that exists in delusion. Be upright, and the three obstructions will be absent. See? How to be upright? What is that which is upright? From the context of the Prakrama Sutra, do you know? Dharma. That's how Huinen defines Dharma. He defines the three jewels, the Buddha jewel, as take refuge in awakening. That's what Buddha means anyway. Take refuge in Dharma, which is Zhi. Some people translate orthodox, but orthodox, heterodox, this little contentious. It just means upright, right? Dharma, that which is correct. You see? Take refuge in purity, Sangha. So here, be upright. Three obstructions will be absent. What is upright? Bring yourself in alignment with Dharma. How? Turn your topsy-turvy views right around. Then it's most likely Dharma. Turn our upside down views right side up. Bring yourself in alignment with Dharma. Flow with causes and conditions. See how the world operates. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. One of the four. Recognize. Flow. Wait or stop sometime. Create. That's how we turn three obstructions into opportunities. So I wanted to emphasize this aspect of, in our life, we practice. And believe me, all of us have plenty of opportunities. Mm-hmm. Plenty of opportunities. We are to practice. But we all understand what Buddha Dharma is. Buddha Dharma. This is something very rare. Very rare. The world doesn't teach us this. The world teaches us to grasp and reject. So, very precious, the Dharma, three jewels. Awakening, that which is upright. And purity, genuine purity, without remainder, the three jewels. And now, the good news is, We've been practicing the whole weekend using Buddha Dharma. Now we have to be grateful. We already use it. But now we're going to talk about this. This is a sheet that we all have the opportunity to take refuge in the three jewels: Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. To take refuge means to bring yourself in alignment. This is our true home. This is what we have to rely on. This is the ultimate gem, the treasure in the midst of muddy water. That's the lotus. So I've asked, I've heard one person want to take refuge. But one is better than none. So we use the Dharma and we have to align ourselves, recognize. This is that which is most important. So I've asked Master Qihu to bestow the three refuges. And usually he doesn't. Usually he holds a whole retreat. Maybe because a guest teacher comes and he says, okay. He says, okay. I told him, should I give a little explanation about three jewels? The five precepts? He says, yeah, go ahead. And he'll come. 15 minutes. Now all of you already know what three jewels are, right? You've been using it. You've been hearing about it. The Buddha jewel. The awakening. Who? Someone else? No, you. Right? This is your true nature, right? But don't cloud it. Don't get caught up with that stormy weather. The Dharma. That which is upright. That which is in alignment with how things actually are. And how things actually are in this world of samsara is causes and conditions. Dependent origination. It's everywhere. See? Learn to use it. Dependent origination is a teaching. It's not a philosophy. It's a teaching to utilize. How? Learn to recognize. First you gotta know what it is. Learn to recognize it. Learn to flow with it. Adapt to it. Learn to stop and wait for it. Learn to create it. And the Sangha, the embodiment of purity. Those who dedicate their whole life to practice, right? Aligning themselves to practice. Without the three jewels in the world, if we don't see the form of monastic system. Actually, the Buddha said, if the world has no more form of the Sangha, that's the end of Dharma. So, right? we gotta have form. So amidst form, no form. Right? It's not no form, just no form. We don't need monastic. No. Take refuge in the three jewels. So Buddha Dharma Sangha. How to do it? We need principles. We need to cultivate our true nature. And the first way to do it is through virtue, to establish a good foundation. Then make the soil ripe and good things can blossom. And the foundation is not killing, not harming. If you always, like what I said about karma, if you always harm, then the content of your Santa Claus bag is always harming. Now, whatever you see, whatever you experience, just filter through those lens of just harm. Everyone else is trying to harm you, and you're trying to harm everyone else back. That's the way you tend to see the world. No killing, no harming. The Buddha instituted primarily for human beings. Right? There was one bhikshu. Accidentally, stepped on some ants. It was clean. The Buddha said, feel great guilt. Guilt meaning vexations. The Buddha said, no. Killing means no killing human beings. Clean. You just clean. I didn't tell you to kill beings. You just clean. Clean your house. Clean your hut. Be careful. But after then, repent. Repent. You'll be at peace. 忏悔得安乐。 When you repent, don't become guilt. Then dharma becomes poison now, you see?
Mm.
So, primarily, no human beings. Don't kill. Don't harm. Steal. Take that which is not yours. If you keep on stealing, taking, you're always thinking someone is stealing from you.
Mm-hmm.
You think so?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or someone's taking advantage of you, or it's not fair, it's injustice. Sexual misconduct.
Mm-hmm.
Healthy, to be healthy. Healthy relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Of your family. Of your partner. And of the whole society. Reverberates out. That's the foundation. Providing safety for other beings. For yourself. Right? For monastics, celibacy. Deception, lying. Lying always has to do with some kind of grasping or rejecting. Explicit. Gaining, losing, covetousness, and so on. So, for your own benefit. Intoxication. Intoxication. Addictive drugs. Alcohol and so on. That if you break that, you probably break the first four. You know? So you have to keep the mind clear. So when someone, for example, when I go to some event, you know, in school or so on, my job, someone offer me a drink, I say, sorry, I'm allergic. I'm not really allergic. But I am allergic. My brain doesn't work that good as it is. I want to kind of cloud it more. No, I'm allergic to it. No thanks. Oh, you're allergic. Yes, I'm allergic. Not really lying. Did I break the... No. I'm allergic. Right? So, we don't need it. But nowadays, it's kind of hip not to drink. Some places. I don't drink for health reasons. Maybe 20, 30 years ago, it's not. You don't drink, what? But now, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, observable. On the basis of this foundation, we can practice. Having precepts is better than not having any. Having precepts means you have a standard on which you can engage, you can practice. You can free yourself. Precepts not meant for judging other people. Free yourself. Bring yourself in alignment with the three jewels. Awakening, being upright, and pure. We have to embody the three jewels. That's the meaning. It's not three jewels out there. Five precepts and just a commandment someone told me to. No, the ultimate point is from Chan perspective, embody the three jewels. So, clouding our mind doesn't really work. So now we understand? Having the path to travel on is better than not having. So we begin with this. Then we conclude with this. Right? Yes.
If the first precept refers to humans, and taking animal lives isn't taking that which isn't freely given, why is the Missouri Buddhist Association vegetarian?
If we really say only human beings, then we will hold on to that dharma and say, oh, sorry, Tibetan Buddhism. The whole Tibetan Buddhism is not Buddhism anymore. And the whole South Asian Buddhism is not Buddhism anymore. I don't need your line to explain that. not going to try to find it. You know what I mean, right? Taking the Dharma, fixed. So when the Buddha, okay, let me put it this way. If you think only vegetarian, then I'm sorry, Shakyamuni Buddha is not a Buddha. He ate whatever was offered to him. One time, this guy tried to test him. He put horse hay in it. Ananda, how can you, King Bimbisara, that's a big patron of Buddhism, gave the whole deer park. Why? Because the Buddha ate it. Ananda was in shock. How dare you invite us for offering for the whole Sangha and you put hay? Buddha says, thank you. And Bimbisara was so touched. Okay, I'll offer you deer park. My whole property for you to practice. He ate anything that put in his bowl, including meat. But different region of forms of Buddhism practice differently. Cold climate, warm climate, customs. So East Asian Buddhism focus on one particular aspect of cultivating compassion, cultivating loving kindness. So, and they have the means to do it. They have the external circumstances that allow for it. So why not practice it? You see? So that tradition continue on. Vegetarianism. But vegetarianism, is it required for Buddhism? No. There's always doctrine and teachings that incorporate whatever circumstances. For example, the Tibetans, when they eat meat, they cultivate. When the meat becomes part of them, they are practicing Dharma, becomes part of them. All beings practicing the Dharma. There's a whole doctrinal explanation about that. You can't argue with that. It does become part of them, and they are practicing Dharma. You see? But vegetarianism, non-vegetarianism, no fixations. Our circumstances, your circumstances, what is called for, what can be done, what could be done. Don't think in terms of what ought to be done.
Mm. I wasn't asking about that in Buddhism. I was asking about from the Kamakansi or Chan Buddhism, Eastern Buddhism.
Chan Buddhism follows basic East Asian Buddhism. So basic East Asian Buddhism, vegetarian. But this was not always true. Certain parts of East Asia, the outskirts, sometimes it's not true. The circumstances determines the causes and conditions. We have to recognize, flow, adapt, wait, and create. Okay. Are you a vegetarian?
Yeah.
Good for you. Maybe your parent, your family member has been out there.
My wife's not, probably a better person than I am.
Yes.
I always have problem people equate Buddhism with vegetarianism.
Yeah.
I'm really not convinced they eating meat have any moral component, and it's kind of our nature.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you accuse a lion in killing a lion when he's eating a zebra,
mm-hmm.
or when you save the zebra, because that's killing that lion star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our circumstances. Lions and zebra have their circumstances,
mm-hmm.
and we have our circumstances. We just adapt and create circumstances that's conducive for practice. But we use it, the Dharma, the teaching, for ourselves. We don't turn it into a standard. Okay? So now that we have explained the meaning of three jewels and five precepts, how many of you would like to receive the three jewels? Please raise your hand. Thank you. Thank you. So what I propose is when Master Chihu comes, we all repeat the three jewels and the five precepts, the opportunity to renew our vows. Right? those people who would like to have Dharma names, maybe we give Dharma names here, then afterwards, please come up and fill your full name, your address, and date of birth. And based on that, you will formally become within the lineage of the three jewels. This is something to be grateful to. Now you become sons and daughters of the Buddha, Buddhas. So let's massage a little bit, fold our towels, and we stand and wait for Master Jiu.